and welcome to the latest episode of the Dialogue Out Loud series. I'm Taylor Petrie, editor of Dialogue, a Journal of Mormon Thought. Today, I'm excited to have with me Stephen Epperson, a former history curator at the Museum of Church History and Art in Salt Lake City and assistant professor in the Department of History at BYU. He's past president of the Unitarian Universalist Ministers of Canada and is a minister emeritus of the Unitarian Church of Vancouver. In his recent article, Armenians and the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, a Hauntological Exhibit, Epperson publishes and comments on an exhibit that he developed while curator of the Museum of Church History and Art on the mission to Armenia in the early 20th century and why the exhibit was ultimately canceled before becoming public. Stephen, welcome. It's so nice to talk to you about your work.
Thank you, Taylor.
So this is such a fascinating article and a fascinating story and history. Let's just start a little bit with how you came to be working on this in the, I believe, late 80s, early 1990s, when you were working at the Church History Museum. How did that, what kind of work did you do, and how did that sort of evolve into this project of working on Armenian history?
Well, I was the history curator at the Museum of Church History and Art in Salt Lake City, and my job principally was to be involved in research and writing for history exhibits at the museum, and also for historic site, you know, restoration projects, for example, like in Palmyra and Kirtland and Nauvoo. I was involved in putting together what was then the permanent history exhibit of the church on the main floor of the museum, and then above and below, like on the second floor and the subfloor, there were exhibit spaces, gallery spaces that were dedicated for temporary exhibits. And so once basically I'd moved past that permanent, the, you know, extensive work for the permanent exhibit, there were a number of other projects that we were working on to develop, you know, like temporary exhibits. One of them, I'm not exactly sure, to tell you the truth, how, because it's been so long now, how this story came to my attention. But in the museum archives and the holdings, there were some amazing Armenian rugs. And I was wondering, like, how did these rugs end up in the collection of the museum? Were they there as works of art, or were they there as historic artifacts? I began digging around, both in our, you know, like the research notes at the museum, but also in the church archives, and then discovered that there was this extraordinary story of efforts by the LDS Church to create and carry out a mission to Armenians in the late Ottoman, early Turkish history period. And then I found out that there were Armenian families in Utah who were the descendants of individuals who had joined the church back in the 1890s, the early 1900s. I contacted them, and then from them started I started learning stories about their family's experience, realized that we had an amazing story to tell at the museum. And then I made a proposal to, you know, museum administration. They got really excited about it, and I got a green light to get going. So,
wow. It is such an amazing story. And I want to set the scene a little bit for our listeners who might not necessarily know why a church mission in Armenia in this era is so fascinating. We'll get to sort of what happens afterward and why the mission comes to an end, and what ends up influencing the politics of the exhibit itself. But can you tell us a little bit about Armenia in this era and the church's efforts that you discovered were kind of happening during this time period?
Well, in the Ottoman Empire, there were about 3 million Armenian people sort of scattered throughout what's now the state of Turkey, but also into Syria, northern Lebanon, also into what now is the current nation state of Armenia. So there were Armenians throughout the Ottoman Empire. Armenians primarily were members of Armenian Orthodox Church. There were also Armenian Catholics, but also American and Northern European Protestants had extensive missionary work going on throughout the Ottoman Empire, focusing primarily on this Armenian population because they couldn't evangelize to the Muslim population in the Ottoman in the Ottoman Empire. And I'm talking extensive institutional presence by American and Northern European evangelical organizations. What happened is that there were some individual Armenians who had been contacted or who knew about, were in this environment, like a Protestant environment within the Ottoman Empire, who learned somehow about the Mormon Church, contacted church leaders directly. This is like in 1881, 82, 83. And then the communication started taking place. And then that led in 1884, 85 to the church sending missionaries to meet with these families that had contacted the church. And then that opened up, you know, the door to meeting other families and for the church to begin sending a small number of missionaries from, you know, from the United States into the Ottoman Empire and beginning to make contacts through families, through kinship networks, et cetera, in a number of different towns and cities in the late Ottoman Empire. Does that make sense?
And there are a couple of LDS congregations that kind of come out of this, again, centered, as I understand it, based on your work, centered around a few key families. But this isn't, you know, just one or two. We really do have a little bit of a small community here, right?
Well, there were, I mean, eventually there were like five branches. I mean, this is, we're talking about a small number of people, like 200 adults, approximately, with their children, five branches of the church. Both in central and in southern, what's now central and southern Turkey and northern Syria. So it was a small but significant number of people, but who were facing very particular set of challenges. Like on the one hand, very enthusiastic about the message of the LDS Church, very committed, loyal members. One of the things that was really wonderful for me in doing the research was to find out just like how well run these branches were, how committed and faithful these Latter-day Saints were to their, you know, to the restored gospel. And like they set up mutual improvement association, you know, relief societies, priesthood, you know, organizations, the works. And they were really good at it, if you will. But at the same time, the church back in the late 19th century is still operating under the model of physical gathering. When the physical gathering meant emigrating out of the Ottoman Empire and settling in the Mountain West among the saints who were building up Zion there. But what happened is that Turkish officials absolutely would not let, you know, large groups of Armenians emigrate. Also, the federal government in the United States was attacking the Mormon Church and its, you know, perpetual immigration fund, et cetera, et cetera. So the church couldn't underwrite the immigration of Armenian saints to Utah, and the Turkish government, the Ottoman government, wouldn't allow Armenians to immigrate either. And so the church and its missionaries were faced with this dilemma. How do we promote, foster, and protect these members of the church and our efforts there? And they came up with the idea of establishing what they called an Eastern Zion. And that is to locate some property that they could purchase and then physically settle those saints on it, bring missionaries from Utah that would help them lay out towns and an agricultural and light industry, you know, kind of cooperative. And that was like the dream of these missionaries and of members there. If we can't immigrate to Utah, we'll try to create Zion here. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so those efforts were really seriously undertaken, like in the late 1890s, early 1900s. But at first, there wasn't enough money to purchase, you know, the property. Then there was persecution of Armenians that meant that, and it was very, very violent. In 1909, all missionaries were pulled out. Anyway, so quite the story.
So it sounds like the kind of work that they had done in Hawaii, for instance, for sort of, again, buying land for the church would kind of run and members would be there. There would be farming. You know, they had that same model in for Armenians, which is, again, yeah, fascinating, like what could have happened had not other historical forces intervened. And that does take us up to 1909 and some of the events that happened there, which brings an end to the church in Armenia. And can you tell us a little bit of that story and what happens to the membership there?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm going to back up just for a moment. In 1898, a Mormon apostle, Anthon Lund, and other missionaries went to the Ottoman Empire, met with Armenian members, asked them if they were up for creating like a physical, you know, settlement of an agricultural and light industry settlement. They said yes. The Lund went around with his companions. They went around and looked at a lot of property. They learned a lot from early Zionist settlers, like how to successfully carry out like an agricultural settlement. They met with land. I mean, there was a lot of land in northern Palestine and southern Syria that was owned by absentee landlords who lived in Beirut and Damascus, who were more than willing to sell huge tracts of land. And Lund found one in particular, southeast of Haifa, 6,000-acre tract, that they were really serious about, we're going to buy this piece of land. But then when the Ottoman officials found out about this, they said, you know, we're not going to let Armenians settle there. The church also said, right at that moment, 1898, we didn't have the money, but we will have the means down the road. Okay. So what happened for a period of time, about 10 years, is that the Armenians there focused with some help from, you know, the church in Utah, focused on rug making. And they did some fantastic work. ZCMI purchased, you know, like a bunch of the rugs that were sent off to, you know, from Armenia, from the Armenians out to Utah.
That was probably my great grandfather that did that, by the way.
Okay. And so for 10 years, they were kind of like, they were just holding their own, hanging in there, trying to foster and develop and cultivate, you know, their congregations and also some kind of economic viability. But then in 1909, there was a very harsh pogrom against Armenians sort of throughout. This is very late Ottoman, you know, Ottoman Empire. This very harsh pogrom. There were about 10 or about a dozen Mormon missionaries from the States who were there, and the church pulled them out. And the saints in Turkey were kind of left to their own devices. And then there was Turkey joins the Axis. I mean, I don't know the name of it. I mean, they joined with Germany and Austro-Hungarian Empire, World War I. There is warfare. And then what happened is there was a coup in the Turkish government, Ottoman government, a military junta comes into power, and they see the Armenians as a potential threat and to the stability of their government. And they also had an ideology of kind of ethnic purity, and they set out to ethnically cleanse Turkey of its Armenian inhabitants. And so between 1915 and, 1917, close to a million, million and a half Armenians who were resident in Turkey, what's now Turkey and Armenia, they were executed outright or forced into concentration camps where many, many of them perished. So of those five existing Mormon branches, the members of three of them basically were wiped out. They ceased to exist, which left two branches, one in what's called Gaziantep and in Aleppo. And Aintab is in southern Turkey and Aleppo is in northern Syria. That's where they had these, that's where Mormon Armenians, the branches, the members of those branches survived this catastrophe, the genocide. But then what happened is that the branch members in Aintab were again threatened in 1921 as French occupying troops, this is post-World War I, French occupying troops are pulling out of southern Turkey and going into Syria, leaving that small branch of Mormons and other Armenians living in Aintab, leaving them very, very vulnerable to what was going to be another round of ethnic cleansing. And the church found out about this. I mean, there was communication going from the church members in Aintab to Mormon church leaders, and they said, this is a very, very serious situation. We're under mortal threat. And so the church sent a missionary and also who had been there previously, this guy named Joseph Booth, and also David O. McKay, to check out the situation. And then David O. McKay said to this Joseph Booth, do everything you can to get the saints out of Aintab and to safety. And so Joseph Booth, very, very interesting character, just tried to move heaven and earth to get these saints in Aintab to safety. He went directly to French generals and to the consuls who were, hastily trying to pull out of Aintab to get passports for Armenian saints to move from there down to safety in Syria and to Aleppo. And he was able to pull it off. So this was like in late November, early December, 1921. All of the Mormons who were in Aintab were given passports to leave the city, which was really kind of unusual. Unfortunately, most of the rest of the Armenians were stuck there and got wiped out. But these Mormons were able to make that exodus out of southern Turkey into Syria, where they joined up with the other Mormon branch in Aleppo. And they saw it as kind of a miraculous kind of exodus experience for them. So that's where we are, early 1922, and in Syria with just this one branch of Armenian Mormons surviving.
It's such a tragic story, and one that is not necessarily well known to a lot of people is the execution, the genocide of Armenians, and the way that the sort of Latter-day Saint story fits into that is really a completely unknown story, which is why your exhibit and your research was such a kind of groundbreaking work at the time. So there is a kind of story within the story here where you did all of this work and then you end up sitting on it for 30 years and publishing it in Dialogue. How did that come about? Why did the exhibit not ever appear in public? And why did you decide to publish it with us now?
Okay, let's go back to the summer of 1993. I had progressed in my research and collection of artifacts. I'd interviewed a lot of Armenian members in Utah. They were extremely excited that the church was paying attention to them and the story of their ancestors. They were delighted at the thought that they were going to have their story told, that artifacts, photographs, rugs, lace, you know, that had been created by their families were going to be put on exhibit. And I was excited because it was a terrific story. It would have made a great museum exhibit. And so I had gotten green lights to continue towards, you know, mounting this exhibit until July 1993, when I was told by a museum administration that we weren't going to proceed any further. And I asked why. And as I recall, as best I can recall, they said, it's politics. The church is in secret negotiations with the Turkish government to get some Mormon representatives into Turkey, and that an exhibit about Armenians that would necessarily have to tell the story of the genocide was absolutely a no-go. So it was just like stopped dead in its tracks. And even though, unfortunately, like I had collected all these artifacts and photos and documents, and I had interviewed all these wonderful, you know, Latter-day Saint members in Utah, and I had to go back to them and say to them, I'm sorry, we can't do this exhibit. And I had to return photos, artifacts, you know, and tell them that that was it. And I just felt like they were really betrayed. I was, you know, deeply, deeply disappointed at the decision that was made. It felt like these people were so humble, and they were so faithful, and they'd gone through so much. And then for the church just to say, oh, no, it's politics, was deeply disappointing, and was one of the reasons why I decided to leave the museum, and I went and worked down at BYU. But I kind of held on to all of my research notes. I had research notes. I had photocopies of documents, historic documents, photocopies of photographs, et cetera. And I hauled them off with me to BYU and just kind of was thinking, what am I going to do with these? I've got to do something with them someday. But then my story moved on. I moved on from BYU and eventually out of the church, and even, you know, left the United States. Here I am working up in Canada. And I've always wanted to return to this story, but I had other work and other responsibilities until a few years ago when I retired from my full-time work. And here are these boxes, you know, them sitting on my shelf of an exhibit that should have taken place. And it has haunted me like for 30 years. And it was like the least that I could do to those good people I met 30 years ago was, you know, to try to recreate that exhibit as best I could, even though it was only going to be a shadow of what it would have been, because I only was able to get permission from the LDS Church to show a handful of historic photographs that are going to be included in the dialogue article. I don't know what's happened to the personal artifacts that belonged to those members. The people I talked to 30 years ago, they're all dead now. Family members are definitely out there, and I hope that this article will be of some use or some. I hope it will be helpful to descendants of the Armenians who went through so much for the sake of their faith.
It's such an amazing story and a story within a story, as we mentioned. Stephen, thank you so much for sharing it with all of us, for saving those notes and for bringing this story forward after all of these years. It's a story that needs to be told, and I'm really honored that you came to dialogue with this material and that we could be a forum for getting this out to the world and honoring that history and honoring the memory of those who worked to tell it. There are other great stories that you reveal in the course of the article that I won't spoil, that I hope that people will get a chance to look at, about some of these artifacts, especially those rugs. And so I hope that people do take a look at it. And I hope that our listeners have enjoyed the conversation, have learned something new, and will check out this article, Armenians and the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, a Hauntological Exhibit, in the spring 2025 issue of Dialogue, and explore other resources on this topic there as well. To our listeners, thank you for joining us today. If you enjoyed the episode, please share it with your friends and colleagues, and don't forget to leave us a review or get in touch with any comments or questions. We hope that you'll tune in for future episodes of our podcast. Please subscribe and rate the show, and be sure to check out the whole range of shows in the Dialogue Podcast Network.
Greetings, my name is Rebecca DeSchweinitz, and I'm thrilled to serve as a board member at the Dialogue Foundation and as one of the hosts of Dialogue Gospel Study. In each episode, which we record live the second and fourth Sunday of every month, we welcome esteemed speakers from a variety of backgrounds to share their insights and perspectives on the Come Follow Me lessons. Our aim is to spark meaningful conversations about the scriptures, to connect them to our personal experiences and to our understandings and explorations of the gospel. To stay in the loop with our upcoming lessons and this opportunity to engage with Mormon thought, culture, and belief, be sure to visit dialoguejournal.com and sign up for our newsletter. By doing so, you'll receive updates and timely links to join our live stream lessons. Additionally, you can catch up on our past guests and episodes by subscribing to Dialogue Journal on YouTube, Facebook, or wherever you listen to podcasts.